jousting. Sir just gave him this look.
Chiswick cackled, quaffed his ale, and wiped the foam away with the back of his hand.
Meanwhile, this daughter of his has been fetching and pouring, a fat little thing, 18 or so.
13, more like,
Raff the sweetling drawled.
Well, be that as it may, she's not much to look at, but Egan's been drinking and gets to touching her, and might be I did a little touching myself. And Raff's telling young Stillwood that he ought to drag the girl upstairs and make herself a man, giving the lad courage, as it were. Finally, Joss reaches up under her skirts, and she shrieks and drops her flagon and goes running off to the kitchen. Well, it would have ended right there, only what does the old fool do? But he goes to Sir and asks him to make us leave the girl alone, him being an anointed knight and all such. Sir Gregor, he wasn't paying no mind to none of our fun, but now he looks. You know how he does, and he commands that the girl be brought before him. Now the old man has to drag her out of the kitchen, and no one to blame but himself. Sir looks her over and says, "So, this is the whore you're so concerned for." And this besotted old fool says, "My laner's no whore, sir," right to Gregor's face. Sir, he never blinks, just says, "She is now," tosses the old man another silver, rips her dress off the wench, and takes her right there on the table in front of her dar, her flapping and wiggling like a rabbit and making these noises. The look on the old man's face, I laughed so hard, ale was coming out of me nose. Then this boy hears the noise, the son, I figure, and comes rushing up from the cellar. So Raff has to stick a dirk in his belly. By then, Sir's done. So he goes back to his drinking, and we all have a turn. Tobbert, you know how he is, he flops her over and goes in the back way. The girl was done fighting by the time I had her. Maybe she decided she liked it after all. Though, to tell the truth, I wouldn't have minded a little wiggling. And now, here's the best bit. When it's all done, Sir tells the old man that he wants his change. The girl wasn't worth a silver, he says. And damned if that old man don't fetch a fistful of coppers, beg my lord's pardon, and thank him for the custom.
The men all roared, none louder than Chiswick himself, who laughed so hard at his own story that snot dribbled from his nose down into his scraggy grey beard. Arya stood in the shadows of the stairwell and watched him. She crept back down to the cellars without saying a word. When Weiss found that she hadn't asked about the clothes, he yanked down her breeches and caned her until blood ran down her thighs. But Arya closed her eyes and thought of all the sayings Sirio had taught her, so she scarcely felt it. 2 nights later, he sent her to barracks hall to serve at table. She was carrying a flagon of wine and pouring when she glimpsed Jake and Hagar at his trencher across the aisle. Chewing her lip, Arya glanced round warily to make certain Wheeze was not in sight. "Fear cuts deeper than swords," she told herself. She took a step and another, and with each she felt less a mouse. She worked her way down the bench, filling wine cups. Rorg sat to Jakin's right, deep drunk, but he took no notice of her. Arya leaned close and whispered, "Chiswick," right in Jakin's ear. The Larathi gave no sign that he had heard. When her flagon was empty, Arya hurried down to the cellars to refill it from the cask and quickly returned to her pouring. No one had died of thirst while she was gone, nor even noted her brief absence. Nothing happened the next day, nor the day after. But on the third day, Arya went to the kitchens with Whis to fetch their dinner.
One of the mountain men fell off the war walk last night and broke his full neck,
she heard Whis tell a cook. Drunk? The woman asked.
No more than usual. Some are saying it was Helen's ghost flung him down.
He snorted to show what he thought of such notions. It wasn't Harren, Arya wanted to say. It was me. She had killed Chiswick with a whisper, and she would kill two more before she was through. I'm the ghost in Harren Howe, she thought, and that night there was one less name to hate.
Daenerys. Each morning from her western ramparts, the Queen would count the sails on Slaver's Bay. Today she counted 25, though some were far away and moving, so it was hard to be certain. Sometimes she missed one, or counted one twice. What does it matter? A strangler only needs 10 fingers? All trade had stopped, and her fisherfolk did not dare put out into the bay. The boulders still dropped a few lines into the river, though even that was hazardous. More remained tied up beneath Meereen's walls of many-coloured brick. There were ships from Meereen out in the bay, too, warships and trading galleys whose captains had taken them to sea when Danny's host first laid siege to the city, now returned to augment the fleets from Carth, Tollis, and New Gis. Her admiral's council had proved worse than useless. "Let them see your dragons," Grolio said. "Let the Yunkish men have a taste of fire, and the trade will flow again."
"Those ships are strangling us, and all my admiral can do is talk of dragons," Danny said. "You are my admiral, are you not?"
"An admiral without ships?"
"Field ships.
Warships cannot be made from brick. The slavers burned every stand of timber within 20 leagues of here."
"Then ride out 22 leagues. I will give you wagons, workers, mules, whatever you require."
"I'm a sailor, not a shipwright. I was sent to fetch your grace back to Pentos. Instead, you brought us here and tore my Cerdulean to pieces for some nails and scraps of wood. I will never see her like again. I may never see my home again, nor my old wife. It was not me who refused the ships this Daxus offered. I cannot fight the Carthene with fishing boats." His business dismayed her, so much so that Danny found herself wondering if the grizzled Pentoshi could be one of her three betrayers.
"No, he's only an old man, far from home and sick at heart. There must be something we can do."
"Aye, and I've told you what. These ships are made of rope and pitch and canvas, of Cohoric pine and teak from Sothoris, old oak from Great Norvis, yew and ash and spruce. Wood, your grace, wood burns, the dragons—"
"I will hear no more about my dragons. Leave me, go pray to your Pentoshi gods for a storm to sink our foes."
"No sailor prays for storms, your grace."
"I am tired of hearing what you will not do. Go!"
Sir Barristan remained. "Our stores are ample for the moment," he reminded her, "and your grace has planted beans and grapes and wheat. Your Dothraki have harried the slavers from the hills and struck the shackles from their slaves. They are planting, too, and will be bringing their crops to Meereen to market. And you will have the friendship of Lazar."
"Dario won that for me, for all that is worth."
"The lamb men. Would that lambs had teeth." "That would make the wolves more cautious, no doubt." That made her laugh.
"How fare your orphan, sir?"
The old knight smiled.
"Well, your grace, it is good of you to ask."
The boys were his pride. 4 or 5 have the makings of knights,
perhaps as many as 12. One would be enough if he were true as you.
The day might come soon when she would have need of every knight.
Will they just for me? I should like that.
Viserys had told us stories of the tourneys he had witnessed in the Seven Kingdoms, but Dany had never seen a joust herself.
They are not ready, Your Grace. When they are, they will be pleased to demonstrate their prowess. I hope that day comes quickly.
She would have kissed her good knight on the cheek. But just then Missandei appeared beneath the arched doorway.
Missandei? Your Grace, Scarhaz awaits your pleasure. Send him up.
The shave-pate was accompanied by two of his brazen beasts. One wore a hawk mask, the other the likeness of a jackal. Only their eyes could be seen behind the brass.
Your Radiance. His Dar was seen to enter the Pyramid of Zak last evening. He did not depart until well after dark.
How many pyramids has he visited? Asked Danny.
11.
And how long since the last murder?
26 days.
The shave-pate's eyes brim with fury. It had been his notion to have the brazen beasts follow her betrothed and take note of all his actions.
So far, Hisdar has made good on his promises.
How? The sons of the Arpi have put down their knives. But why? Because the noble Hisdar asks sweetly? He is one of them, I tell you. That's why they obey him. He may well be the Harpy.
If there is a Harpy.
Scarhaz was convinced that somewhere in Meereen, the sons of the Harpy had a high-born overlord, a secret general commanding an army of shadows. Danny did not share his belief. The brazen beasts had taken dozens of the Harpy sons, and those who had survived their capture had yielded names when questioned sharply. Too many names, it seemed to her. It would have been pleasant to think that all the deaths were the work of a single enemy, who might be caught and killed, but Danny suspected that the truth was otherwise.
Ah, my enemies are legion. Hisdar Zolorek is a persuasive man, with many friends, and he is wealthy. Perhaps he has bought this piece for us with gold, or convinced the other highborn that our marriage is in their best interests.
If he is not the RP, he knows him. I can find the truth of that easy enough. Give me your leave to put Hisdar to the question, and I will bring you a confession.
No, she said, I do not trust these confessions. You have brought me too many of them, all of them worthless.
Your Radiance.
No, I said.
The shave-pate scowl turned his ugly face even uglier.
A mistake. The great master Hisdar plays your worship for a fool. Do you want a serpent in your bed?
I want Dario in my bed, but I sent him away for the sake of you and yours. You may continue to watch Hisdar Zolorik, but no harm is to come to him. Is that understood?
I'm not deaf, Magnificence. I will obey.
Scarhaz drew a parchment scroll from his sleeve.
Your worship should have a look at this. A list of all the Myrinese ships in the blockade, with their captains. Great masters all.
Danny studied the scroll. All the ruling families of Meereen were named. Haskar, Merrick, Quasar, Zak, Razda, Gazin, Paul, even Resnek and Lorek.
What am I to do with a list of names?
Every man on that list has kin within the city. Sons and brothers, wives and daughters, mothers and fathers. Let my brazen beast seize them. Their lives will win you back those ships.
If I send the brazen beasts into the pyramids, it will mean open war inside the city. I have no trust in Hisdar. I have to hope for peace.
Danny held the parchment above a candle and watched the names go up in flame, while Scarhaz glowered at her. Afterwards, Sir Barristan told her that her brother Rhaegar would have been proud of her. Danny remembered the words Sir Jorah had spoken at Astabor.
Rhaegar fought valiantly. Rhaegar fought nobly. Rhaegar fought honourably. and Rhaegar died.
When she descended to the purple marble hall, she found it almost empty.
"Are there no petitioners today?" Danny asked Resnick Bo Resnick. "No one who craves justice or silver for a sheep."
"No, your worship. The city is afraid."
"There's nothing to fear."
But there was much and more to fear, as she learned that evening. As her young hostages, Miklas and Kesmir, were laying out a simple supper of autumn greens and ginger soup for her, Iri came to tell her that Galazi Galari had returned, with three blue graces from the temple.
"Grey Worm has come as well, Khaleesi. They beg words with you most urgently. Bring them to my hall and summon Resnick and Skarhaz. Did the Green Grace say what this was about?"
"Astapor," said Iri. Grey Worm began the tale. "He came out of the morning mists, a rider on a pale horse, dying. His mare was staggering as she approached the city gates, her sides pink with blood and lather, her eyes rolling with terror. Her rider called out, 'She is burning! She is burning!' and fell from the saddle. This one was sent for and gave orders that the rider be brought to the Blue Graces. When your servants carried him inside the gates, he cried out again, 'She is burning!' Under his toka, he was a skeleton, all bones and fevered flesh."
One of the Blue Graces took up the tale from there.
"The Unsullied brought this man to the temple, where we stripped him and bathed him in cool water. His clothes were soiled, and my sisters found half an arrow in his thigh. Though he had broken off the shaft, the head remained inside him, and the wound had mortified, filling him with poisons. He died within the hour, still crying out that she was burning."
"She is burning," Daenerys repeated. "Who is she?"
"Astapor, your radiance," said another of the Blue Graces. "He said it once. He said, 'Astapor is burning.' It might have been his fever talking."
"Your radiance speaks wisely," said Galazar Galari. "But Azara saw something else."
The Blue Grace called Azara folded her hands.
"My queen," she murmured, "his fever was not brought on by the arrow. He had soiled himself, not once but many times. The stains reached to his knees, and there was dried blood amongst his excrement." "His horse was bleeding," Grey Worm said.
"This thing is true, your grace," the eunuch confirmed. "The pale mare was bloody from his spur."
"That may be so, your radiance," said Azara. "But this blood was mingled with his stool. It stained his small clothes."
"He was bleeding from the bowels," said Galazza Galari.
"We cannot be certain," said Azara, "but it may be that Meereen has more to fear than the spears of the Yunkai."
"We must pray," said the Green Grace. "The god sent this man to us. He comes as a harbinger. He comes as a sign."
A sign of what?" asked Danny.
"A sign of wrath and ruin."
She did not want to believe that.
"He was one man, one sick man with an arrow in his leg. A horse brought him here, not a god." "A pale mare."
Danny rose abruptly.
"I thank you for your counsel and for all that you did for this poor man."
The Green Grace kissed Danny's fingers before she took her leave.
"We shall pray for Astapor."
"And for me. Oh, pray for me, my lady."
If Astapor had fallen, nothing remained to prevent Yunkai from turning north. She turned to Sir Barristan.
"Send riders into the hills to find my blood riders. Recall Brown Ben and the Second Sons as well. And the Storm Crows, your grace."
"Dario."
"Yes, yes."
Just 3 nights ago she had dreamt of Dario lying dead beside the road, staring sightlessly into the sky as crows quarreled above his corpse. Other nights she tossed in her bed, imagining that he had betrayed her, as he had once betrayed his fellow captains in the Stormcrows.
He brought me their heads.
What if he had taken his company back to Yunkai to sell her for a pot of gold?
He would not do that, would he?
The Stormcrows, too. Send riders after them at once. The second sons were the first to return, 8 days after the queen sent forth her summons. When Sir Barristan told her that her captain desired words with her, she thought for a moment that it was Dario, and her heart leapt. But the captain that he spoke of was Brown Ben Plum. Brown Ben had a seamed and weathered face, skin the colour of old teak, white hair, and wrinkles at the corners of his eyes. Danny was so pleased to see his leathery brown face that she hugged him. His eyes crinkled in amusement.
"I heard talk your grace was going to take a husband," he said, "but no one told me it was me."
They laughed together as Resnick sputtered, but the laughter ceased when Brown Ben said,
"We caught 3 Astapori. Your worship had best hear what they say. Bring them."
Daenerys received them in the grandeur of her hall, as tall candles burned amongst the marble pillars. When she saw that the Astapori were half-starved, she sent for food at once. These 3 were all that remained of a dozen who had set out together from the Red City, a bricklayer, a weaver, and a cobbler.
"What befell the rest of your party?" the queen asked.
"Slain," said the cobbler. "Yunkai sell swords, roam the hills north of Astapor, hunting down those who flee the flames."
"Has the city fallen, then? Its walls were thick."
"This is so,"
said the bricklayer, a stoop-backed man with rheumy eyes.
"But they were old and crumbling as well."
The weaver raised her head.
"Every day we told each other that the Dragon Queen was coming back."
The woman had thin lips and dull, dead eyes, set in a pinched and narrow face.
"Cleon had sent for you, it was said, and you were coming."
"He sent for me,"
thought Danny.
"Well, that much is true, at least.
Outside our walls, the Yunkai devoured our crops and slaughtered our herds," the cobbler went on. "Inside, we starved. We ate cats and rats and leather. A horse hide was a feast. King Cutthroat and Queen Whore accused each other of feasting on the flesh of the slain. Men and women gathered in secret to draw lots and gorge upon the flesh of him who drew the black stone. The pyramid of Naklos was despoiled and set aflame by those who claimed that Krasny's Mo Naklos was to blame for all our woes.
Others blamed Daenerys," said the weaver, "but more of us still loved you. She is on her way," we said to one another. "She is coming at the head of a great host with food for all." "I can scarce feed my own folk. If I had marched to Astapor, I would have lost Meereen."
The cobbler told them how the body of the Butcher King had been disinterred and clad in copper armour, after the Green Grace of Astapor had a vision that he would deliver them from the Yunkai. Armoured and stinking, the corpse of Cleon the Great was strapped onto the back of a starving horse to lead the remnants of his new Unsullied on a sortie. But they rode right into the iron teeth of a legion from New Gis and were cut down to a man. Afterward, the Green Grace was impaled upon a stake in the Plaza of Punishment and left until she died. In the Pyramid of Ulor, the survivors had a great feast that lasted half the night and washed the last of their food down with poison wine, so none need wake again come morning. Soon after came the sickness, a bloody flux that killed 3 men of every 4, until a mob of dying men went mad and slew the guards on the main gate. The old brickmaker broke in to say,
"No, that was the work of healthy men running to escape the flocks."
"Does it matter?" asked the cobbler. The guards were torn apart and the gates thrown open. The legions of Nugis came pouring into Astabor, followed by the Yunkai and the sellswords on their horses. Queen Hor died fighting them, with a curse upon her lips. King Cutthroat yielded and was thrown into a fighting pit to be torn apart by a pack of starving dogs.
"Even then some said you were coming," said the weaver. "They swore that they'd seen you mounted on a dragon flying high above the camps of the Yunkai. Every day we looked for you."
"I could not come," the queen thought. "I dare not."
"And when the city fell," demanded Skarhaz, "what then?"
"The butchery began. The Temple of the Graces was full of the sick, who had come to ask the gods to heal them. The legions sealed the doors and set the temple ablaze with torches. Within the hour, fires were burning in every corner of the city. As they spread, they joined with one another. The streets were full of mobs, running this way and that to escape the flames. But there was no way out. The Yunkai held the gates."
"Yet you escaped," the shave pate said. "How is that?"
The old man answered,
"I am by trade a brickmaker, as my father and his father were before me. My grandfather built our house up against the city walls. It was an easy thing to work loose a few bricks every night. When I told my friends, they helped me shore up the tunnel so it would not collapse. We all agreed that it might be good to have our own way out."
"I left you with a council to rule over you," Danny thought. "A healer, a scholar, and a priest."
She could still recall the Red City as she had first seen it, dry and dusty behind its red brick walls, dreaming cruel dreams, yet full of life.
"There were islands in the Worm where lovers kissed, but in the Plaza of Punishment they peeled the skin off men in strips and left them hanging naked for the flies. It is good that you have come," she told the Astapori. "You will be safe in Meereen."
The cobbler thanked her for that, and the old brickmaker kissed her foot, but the weaver looked at her with eyes as hard as slate.
"She knows I lie," the queen thought. "She knows I cannot keep them safe. Astapor is burning, and Meereen is next."
"There's more coming," Bronwyn announced when the Astapori had been led away. "These three had horses. Most are afoot."
"How many are they?" asked Resnick.
Bronwyn shrugged. "Hundreds, thousands, some sick, some burned, some wounded. The cats and the windblown are swarming through the hills with lance and lash, driving them north and cutting down the laggards.
Mouths on feet, and sick, you say?"
Resnick wrung his hands.
"Your worship must not allow them in the city."
"I wouldn't," said Brown Ben Plum. "I'm no maester, mind you, but I know you got to keep the bad apples from the good."
"These are not apples, Ben," said Danny. "These are men and women, sick and hungry and afraid. My children. I should have gone to Astapor."
"Your grace could not have saved them," said Sir Barristan. "You warned King Cleon against this war with Yunkai. The man was a fool, and his hands were red with blood."
"And are my hands any cleaner?"
She remembered what Dario had said, that all kings must be butchers or meat.
"Cleon was the enemy of our enemy. If I had joined him at the horns of Hasset, we might have crushed the Yunkai between us."
The shavepate disagreed.
"If you had taken the Unsullied south to Hasset, the Sons of the Harpy—"
I know.
"It is Aroa all over again."
Brown Ben Plum was puzzled. "Who is Aroa?"
"A girl I thought I'd save from rape and torment. All I did was make it worse for her in the end. And all I did in Astapor was make 10,000 Aroids."
"Your grace could not have known."
"I am the queen. It was my place to know."
"What is done,
said Resnick Mo Resnick. "Your worship, I beg you, take the noble Hesdar for your king at once. He can speak with the wise masters, make a peace for us."
"On what terms?" "Beware the perfume seneschal," Quaith had said. The masked woman had foretold the coming of the pale mare. Was she right about the noble Resnick, too? "I may be a young girl innocent of war, but I'm not a lamb to walk bleating into the harpy's den. I still have my Unsullied. I have the Storm Crows and the Second Sons. I have three companies of freedmen."
"Them and dragons?" said Brown Ben Plum, with a grin. "In the pit, in chains," wailed Resnick Mo Resnick. "What good are dragons that cannot be controlled? Even the Unsullied grew fearful when they must open the doors to feed them."
"What of the Queen's little pets?"
Brown Ben's eyes crinkled in amusement. The grizzled captain of the Second Sons was a creature of the Free Companies, a mongrel with the blood of a dozen different peoples flowing through his veins. But he had always been fond of the dragons, and them of him.
"Pets!" screeched Resnick. "Monsters, rather! Monsters that feed on children! We cannot—"
"Silence," said Daenerys. "We will not speak of that."
Resnick shrank away from her, flinching from the fury in her tone.
"Forgive me, Magnificence, I did not—"
Brown Ben Plum bawled over him.
"Your Grace, the Yunkish, got three free companies against our two. And there's talk the Yunkish men sent to Valantis to fetch back the Golden Company. Those bastards feel 10,000. Yunkai's got four Giscari legions, too, maybe more. And I heard it said they sent riders across the Dothraki Sea to maybe bring some big Khalasar down on us. We need them dragons, the way I see it."
Danny sighed. "I'm sorry, Ben. I dare not loose the dragons." She could see that was not the answer that he wanted. Plum scratched at his speckled whiskers.
"If there's no dragons in the balance, well, we should leave before them Yunkish bastards close the trap. Only first make the slavers pay to see our backs. They pay the Khals to leave their cities be. Why not us? Sell Meereen back to them, and start west with wagons full of gold and gems and such."
"You want me to loot Meereen and flee?"
"No, I will not do that. Grey Worm, are my freedmen ready for battle?"
The eunuch crossed his arms against his chest.
"They are not Unsullied, but they will not shame you. This one will swear to that by spear and sword, your worship."
"Good, that's good."
Daenerys looked at the faces of the men around her, the shave-pate scowling, Sir Barristan with his lined face and sad blue eyes, Resnick Mo Resnick, pale, sweating, Bron Ben, white-haired, grizzled, tough as old leather, Grey Worm, smooth-cheeked, stolid, expressionless.
"Dario should be here, and my blood riders," she thought. "If there is to be battle, the blood of my blood should be with me."
She missed Sir Jorah Mormont, too.
"He lied to me, informed on me, but he loved me, too, and he always gave good counsel."
"I defeated the young Kay before. I will defeat them again."
"Where, though? How?"
"You mean to take the field?"
The shave-pate's voice was thick with disbelief.
"That would be folly. Our walls are taller and thicker than the walls of Astapor, and our defenders are more valiant. The Yunkai will not take this city easily."
Sir Barristan disagreed.
I do not think we should allow them to invest us. Theirs is a patchwork host at best. These slavers are no soldiers. If we take them unawares—"
"Small chance of that," the shave-pate said. "The Yunkai have many friends inside the city. They will know."
"How large an army can we muster?"
Danny asked.
"'Not large enough, begging your royal pardon,' said Bran Ben Plum. "'What does Naharis have to say? "'If we're going to make a fight of this, we need his stormcrows.
"'Dario is still in the field.
"'Oh, gods, what have I done? "'Have I sent him to his death? "'Then I will need your second sons to scout our enemies, "'where they are, how fast they are advancing, "'how many men they have, and how they are disposed.'
We'll need provisions, fresh horses too.
Of course, Sir Barristan will see to it.
Bran Ben scratched his chin.
Might be we could get some of 'em to come over. If your grace could spare a few bags of gold and gems, just to give their captains a good taste, as it were. Well, who knows?
Buy them. Why not?
Danny said. That sort of thing went on all the time amongst the free companies of the disputed land, she knew.
Yes, very good. Resnick, see to it. Once the second sons ride out, close the gates and double the watch upon the walls.
It shall be done, magnificence, said Resnick, Mo Resnick. What of these Astapori?
My children, they are coming here for help, for succour and protection. We cannot turn our backs on them.
Sir Barristan frowned. Your Grace, I have known the bloody flux to destroy whole armies when left to spread unchecked. The Seneschal is right. We cannot have the Astapori in Meereen.
Danny looked at him helplessly.
It was good the dragons did not cry.
As you say, then, we will keep them outside the walls until this curse has run its course. Set up a camp for them beside the river, west of the city. We will send them what food we can. Perhaps we can separate the healthy from the sick.
All of them were looking at her.
Will you make me say it twice? Go and do as I've commanded you.
Danny rose, brushed past Brown Ben, and climbed the steps to the sweet solitude of her terrace. 200 leagues divided Meereen from Astapor, yet it seemed to her that the sky was darker to the southwest, smudged and hazy with the smoke of the red cities passing.
Brick and blood built Astapor, and brick and blood its people.
The old rhyme rang in her head.
Ash and bone is Astapor, and ash and bone its people.
She tried to recall Eroa's face, but the dead girl's features kept turning into smoke. When Daenerys finally turned away, Sir Barristan stood near her, wrapped in his white cloak against the chill of evening.
"'Can we make a fight of this?' she asked him.
"'Men can always fight, Your Grace. Ask, rather, if we can win. Dying is easy, but victory comes hard. Your freedmen are half-trained and unblooded.' Your sail swords once served your foes, and once a man turns his cloak, he will not scruple to turn it again. You have two dragons who cannot be controlled, and a third that may be lost to you. And beyond these walls, your only friends are the Lazarine, who have no taste for war. My walls are strong, though, no stronger than when we sat outside them, and the sons of the Harpy are inside the walls with us. So are the great masters, both those who did not kill and the sons of those who did.
I know, the queen sighed. What do you counsel, sir?
Battle, said Sir Barristan. Meereen is overcrowded and full of hungry mouths, and you have too many enemies within. We cannot long withstand a siege, I fear. Let me meet the foe as he comes north, on ground of my own choosing.
Meet the foe? She echoed, with the freedmen you've called half-trained and unblooded.
We were all unblooded once, Your Grace. The unsullied will help stiffen them. If I had 500 knights,
or five, and if I give you the unsullied, I will have no one but the brazen beast to hold Meereen.
When Sir Barristan did not dispute her, Danny closed her eyes.
Gods, she prayed, you took Khal Drogo, who was my sun and stars. You took our valiant son before he drew a breath. you have had your blood of me. Help me now, I pray you. Give me the wisdom to see the path ahead and the strength to do what I must do to keep my children safe."
The gods did not respond. When she opened her eyes again, Daenerys said, "I cannot fight two enemies, one within and one without. If I am to hold Meereen, I must have the city behind me, the whole city. I need... She could not say it. "Your Grace," Sir Barristan prompted, gently, "a queen belongs not to herself, but to her people. I need Hisda Zolorik."
Eddard. "I stood last vigil for him myself," Sir Barristan Selmy said, as they looked down at the body in the back of the cart. "He had no one else. A mother in the veil, I'm told." In the pale dawn light, the young knight looked as though he were sleeping. He had not been handsome, but death had smoothed his rough-hewn features, and the Silent Sisters had dressed him in his best velvet tunic, with a high collar, to cover the ruin the lance had made of his throat. Eddard Stark looked at his face and wondered if it had been for his sake that the boy had died. Slain by a Lannister bannerman before Ned could speak to him? Could that be mere happenstance? He supposed he would never know. "Hugh was John Arryn's squire for 4 years, Selmy went on. "The king knighted him before he rode north in John's memory. The lad wanted it desperately, yet I fear he was not ready." Ned had slept badly last night, and he felt tired beyond his years. "None of us is ever ready," he said. "For knighthood?"
"For death."
Gently, Ned covered the boy with his cloak, a blood-stained bit of blue, bordered in crescent moons. When his mother asked why her son was dead, he reflected bitterly, they would tell her they had fought to honour the king's hand, Eddard Stark. This was needless. "War should not be a game," Ned turned to the woman beside the cart, shrouded in grey, face hidden, but for her eyes. The Silent Sisters prepared men for the grave, and it was ill fortune to look on the face of death. "Send his armour home to the Vale. The mother will want to have it."
"It is worth a fair piece of silver," Sir Barristan said. "The boy had it forged special for the tourney. Plain work, but good. I do not know if he had finished paying the smith."
"He paid yesterday, my lord, and he paid dearly," Ned replied. And to the Silent Sister he said, "Send the mother the armour. I will deal with this smith." She bowed her head. Afterwards, Sir Barristan walked with Ned to the king's pavilion. The camp was beginning to stir. Fat sausages sizzled and spit over fire pits, spicing the air with a sense of garlic and pepper. Young squires hurried about on errands as their masters woke, yawning and stretching to meet the day. A serving man with a goose under his arm bent his knee when he caught sight of them.
"My lords,"
he muttered, as the goose honked and pecked at his fingers. The shields displayed outside each tent heralded its occupant. The silver eagle, a sea guard. Bryce Caron's field of nightingales. A cluster of grapes for the red wines. Brindle boar, red ox, burning tree, white ram, triple spiral, purple unicorn, dancing maiden, black adder, twin towers, horned owl, and last, the pure white blazons of the king's guard, shining like the dawn.
"The king means to fight in the melee today,"
Sir Barristan said, as they were passing Sir Meryn's shield, its paint solid by a deep gash, where Loras Tyrell's lance had scarred the wood as he drove him from his saddle. "Yes," Ned said grimly. Jorah had woken him last night to bring him that news. Small wonder he had slept so badly. Sir Barristan's look was troubled. They say night's beauties fade at dawn, and the children of wine are oft disowned in the morning light. They say so, Ned agreed, but not of Robert. Other men might reconsider words spoken in drunken bravado, but Robert Baratheon would remember, and remembering would never back down. The king's pavilion was close by the water, and the morning mists of the river had wreathed it in wisps of grey. It was all of golden silk, the largest and grandest structure in the camp. Outside the entrance, Robert's war hammer was displayed beside an immense iron shield blazoned with the crown stag of House Baratheon. Ned had hoped to discover the king still abed in a wine-soaked sleep, but luck was not with him. They found Robert drinking beer from a polished horn and roaring his displeasure at two young squires who were trying to buckle him into his armour. "Your Grace," one was saying, almost in tears, "it's made too small, it won't go." He fumbled, and the gorget he was trying to fit around Robert's thick neck tumbled to the ground.
"Seven hells," Robert swore. "Do I have to do it myself? Piss on the both of you, pick it up. Don't just stand there gaping, Lancel. Pick it up."
The lad jumped, and the king noticed his company.
"Look at these oaths, Ned. My wife insisted I take these two to squire for me, and they're worse than useless. Can't even put a man's armour on properly. Squires, they say? I say they're swineherd dressed up in silk."
Ned only needed a glance to understand the difficulty. "The boys are not at fault," he told the king. "You're too fat for your armour, Robert." Robert Baratheon took a long swallow of beer, tossed the empty horn onto his sleeping furs, wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, and said darkly,
"Fat? Fat, is it? Is that how you speak to your king?"
He let go his laughter, sudden as a storm.
"Damn you, Ned, why are you always right?"
The squires smiled nervously until the king turned on them.
"You, yes, both of you. You heard the hand? The king is too fat for his armour. Go find Sir Aaron Sanigar. Tell him I need the breastplate stretcher. Now, what are you waiting for?"
The boys tripped over each other in the haste to be quit of the tent. Robert managed to keep a stern face until they were gone. Then he dropped back in his chair, shaking with laughter. Sir Barristan Selmy chuckled with him. Even Eddard Stark managed a smile. Always, though, the graver thoughts crept in. He could not help taking note of the two squires. Handsome boys, fair and well-made. One was Sansa's age, with long golden curls, the other perhaps 15, sandy-haired, with a wisp of a moustache and the emerald-green eyes of the queen.
"I wish I could be there to see Sanigar's face," Robert said. "I hope he'll have the wit to send them to someone else. We ought to keep them running all day."
"Those boys," Ned asked him, "Lannisters?" Robert nodded, wiping tears from his eyes.
"Cousins, sons of Lord Tywin's brother. One of the dead ones, or perhaps the live one, not to come to think of it. I don't recall. My wife comes from a very large family, Ned."
A very ambitious family, Ned thought. He had nothing against the squires, but it troubled him to see Robert surrounded by the queen's kin, waking and sleeping. The Lannister appetite for offices and honours seemed to know no bounds. "The talk is you and the queen had angry words last night." The mirth curdled on Robert's face.
"The woman tried to forbid me to fight in the melee. She's sulking in the castle now, damn her. Your sister would never have shamed me like that."
"You never knew Lyanna as I did, Robert," Ned told him. "You saw her beauty, but not the iron underneath. She would have told you that you have no business in the melee."
"You too," the king frowned. "You're a sour man, Stark. Too long in the north. All the juices have frozen inside you. Well, mine are still running."
He slapped his chest to prove it. "You are the king," Ned reminded him.
"I sit on the damned iron seat where I must.
Does that mean I don't have the same hungers as other men? A bit of wine now and again? A girl squealing in bed? The feel of a horse between my legs? Seven hells, Ned! I want to hit someone!
Sir Barristan Selmy spoke up. Your Grace, he said, it is not seemly that the king should ride into the melee. It would not be a fair contest. Who would dare strike you? Robert seemed honestly taken aback.
Why, all of them damn it if they can. And the last man left standing
will be you, Ned finished. He saw at once that Selmy had hit the mark. The dangers of the melee were only a savour to Robert, but this touched on his pride. Sir Barristan is right. There's not a man in the Seven Kingdoms who would dare risk your displeasure by hurting you. The king rose to his feet, his face flushed.
Are you telling me those prancing cravens will let me win?
For a certainty, Ned said, and Sir Barristan Selmy bowed his head in silent accord. For a moment, Robert was so angry he could not speak. He strode across the tent, whirled, strode back, his face dark and angry. He snatched up his breastplate from the ground and threw it at Barristan Selmy in a wordless fury. Selmy dodged.
Get out, the king said then, coldly. Get out, before I kill you.
Sir Barristan left quickly. Ned was about to follow when the king called out again.
Not you, Ned.
Ned turned back. Robert took up his horn again, filled it with beer from a barrel in the corner, and thrust it at Ned.
Drink, he said brusquely. I've no thirst. Drink! Your king commands it.
Ned took the horn and drank. The beer was black and thick, so strong it stung the eyes. Robert sat down again.
Damn you, Ned Stark. You and John Aaron. I loved you both. What have you done to me? You were the one should have been king, you or John.
You had the better claim, Your Grace.
I told you to drink, not to argue. You made me king. You could at least have the courtesy to listen when I talk, damn you. Look at me, Ned. Look at what kinging has done to me. God's too fat for me armour. How did it ever come to this? Robert, drink and stay quiet. The king is talking. I swear to you, I was never so alive as when I was winning this throne, or so dead as now that I've won it. And Cersei, I've John Aaron to thank for her. I had no wish to marry after Lyanna was taken from me, but John said the realm needed an heir. Cersei Lannister would be a good match, he told me. She would bind Lord Tywin to me, should Viserys Targaryen ever try to win back his father's throne. The king shook his head. I love that old man, I swear it, but now I think he was a bigger fool than Moonboy. Oh, Cersei is lovely to look at, truly, but cold. Oh, the way she guards her cunt. You'd think she'd had all the gold of Casterly Rock between her legs. Here, give me that beer, if you won't drink it. He took the horn, upended it, belched, wiped his mouth. I'm sorry for your girl, Ned, truly. About the wolf, I mean. My son was lying. I'll stake my soul on that. My son... You love your children, don't you?
With all my heart, Ned said.
Let me tell you a secret, Ned. More than once, I have dreamed of giving up the crown. Take a ship for the free cities, with my horse and my hammer, spend my time warring and whoring. That's what I was made for. The sellsword king. How the singers would love me. You know what stops me? The thought of Joffrey on the throne, with Cersei standing behind him, whispering in his ear. My son! How could I have made a son like that, Ned?
He's only a boy, Ned said awkwardly. He had small liking for Prince Joffrey, but he could hear the pain in Robert's voice. Have you forgotten how wild you were at his age?
It would not trouble me if the boy was wild, Ned. You don't know him as I do.
He sighed and shook his head.
Ah, perhaps you're right. John despaired of me often enough, yet I grew into a good king.
Robert looked at Ned and scowled at his silence.
You might speak up and agree now, you know.
Your Grace, Ned began carefully. Robert slapped Ned on the back.
Say I'm a better king than Ares, and be done with it. You never could lie for love nor honour, Ned Stark. I'm still young, and now that you're here with me, things will be different. We'll make this a reign to sing of, and damn the Lannisters to seven hells. I smell bacon. Who do you think our champion will be today? Have you seen Mace Tyrell's boy? The Knight of Flowers, they call him. Now there's a son any man would be proud to own to. Last tourney, he dumped the Kingslayer on his golden rump. You ought to have seen the look on Cersei's face. I laughed till my sides hurt. Renly says he has this sister, a maid of 14. Ooh, lovely as a dawn.
They broke their fast on black bread and boiled goose eggs and fish fried up with onions and bacon at a trestle table by the river's edge. The king's melancholy melted away with the morning mist, and before long Robert was eating an orange and waxing fond about a morning at the Eyrie when they had been boys.
I'd given John a barrel of oranges, remember? Only the things had gone rotten, so I flung mine across the table and hit Dax right on the nose. You remember Red Ford's pock-faced squire? He tossed one back at me, and before John could so much as fart, there were oranges flying across the high hall in every direction.
He laughed uproariously, and even Ned smiled, remembering. This was a boy he had grown up with, he thought. This was the Robert Baratheon he'd known and loved. If he could prove that the Lannisters were behind the attack on Bran, prove that they had murdered John Arryn, this man would listen. Then Cersei would fall, and the Kingslayer with her. And if Lord Tywin dared to rouse the West, Robert would smash him as he had smashed Rhaegar Targaryen on the Trident. He could see it all so clearly. That breakfast tasted better than anything Eddard Stark had eaten in a long time. And afterward, his smile came easier and more often, until it was time for the tournament to resume. Ned walked with the king to the jousting field. He had promised to watch the final tilts with Sansa. Septa Mordain was ill today, and his daughter was determined not to miss the end of the jousting. As he saw Robert to his place, he noted that Cersei Lannister had chosen not to appear. The place beside the king was empty. That, too, gave Ned cause to hope. He shouldered his way to where his daughter was seated and found her as the horns blew for the day's first joust. Sansa was so engrossed she scarcely seemed to notice his arrival. Sandor Clegane was the first rider to appear. He wore an olive-green cloak over his soot-grey armour. That and his hound's head helm were his only concessions to ornament. 100 golden dragons on the Kingslayer, Littlefinger announced loudly as Jaime Lannister entered the lists, riding an elegant blood-bay destrier. The horse wore a blanket of gilded ringmail, and Jaime glittered from head to heel. Even his lance was fashioned from the golden wood of the Summer Isles. "Done," Lord Renly shouted back. "The hound has a hungry look about him this morning."
"Even hungry dogs know better than to bite the hand that feeds them," Littlefinger called dryly.
Sandor Clegane dropped his visor with an audible clang and took up his position. Sir Jaime tossed a kiss to some woman in the commons, gently lowered his visor, and rode to the end of the lists. Both men couched their lances. Ned Stark would have loved nothing so much as to see them both lose, but Sansa was watching it all moist-eyed and eager. The hastily erected gallery trembled as the horses broke into a gallop. The hound leaned forward as he rode, his lance rock-steady. But Jaime shifted his seat deftly in the instant before impact. Clegane's point was turned harmlessly against the golden shield with the lion blazon, while his own hit square. Wood shattered, and the hound reeled, fighting to keep his seat. Sansa gasped. A ragged